Good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsher. Thank you for joining us on this beautiful, no, not really beautiful, I would say hot, July 20th, 2019. I'm back and better than ever. How you doing, Steve-O?
It's good to have you back, Anthony, after your week off sabbatical. a historic day, of course, July 20th, 1969, 50 years ago today. A man walked on the moon for the first time, so hopefully our show can come close to that type of a historic event.
I mean, I think we do a pretty good job. We come close every week.
I mean, they're not writing headlines about us, but, you know, I feel like every week it's almost, to get the show off the ground, it almost feels like we're doing a moon landing here.
Well, I would love to say that I hope people are golfing today or on their way today, but today would be the day that I'm hoping that people are being safe, especially if you have any kind of health concern, particularly if you have any health concern. Please stay inside. Stay hydrated. It's brutal out there.
We feel bad for the weekend golfer because obviously Saturday and Sunday is their time to go out and play, but unfortunately not this weekend. There'll be other weekends. I mean, the heat index is already going to be 100 within a couple of hours. It's going to be well over 100 by noontime. So, unfortunately, if you didn't get out, even if you got out on the golf course at, let's say, 6 o'clock in the morning, it was still awfully hot and humid. And, yeah, this is, unfortunately, this is not the weekend to play. You know, this is the weekend to go visit your pro, go to the golf shop, go to Pete's Golf Shop.
There you go.
Go to an indoor place, swing the club around, or, you know, practice your putting or work on your short game or something. Yeah, unfortunately, this weekend is not the weekend to be playing 18 holes.
And we don't give out a lot of these, Steve and I, but if, you know, in lieu of this current situation, we are giving out beach passes. So you can go to you have a beach pass for tonight.
Mention our name.
New York State will happily oblige.
Absolutely. Why not?
So let's get to it. We got a few things before we get to Nick Beto, Nassau Country Club. Looking forward to talking to him, but we got some major championship going on out here.
Well,
today.
Isn't it weird though that it's the middle of July, or actually the third week of July, and we're already talking about the last major of the year?
You know, you and I, that's why we're here together, because that was going to be my question for you, was the sense of how are you processing it emotionally now that the major championships are going to be done?
Well, because I mean, look, even though golf is a 12-month a year sport, it really, to me, it doesn't feel like the season starts until they're playing in Hawaii in January. They have the Tournament of Champions, and then you've got the Sony Open in Hawaii. Yep. To me, that's when the golf season starts. And now the fact that the PGA Tour has compressed the schedule, so they want to get the playoffs done, not Labor Day, but the week before Labor Day, it really does feel like it's happening too fast.
Yeah.
Like there really should be more to the season, because usually by this time it's like, okay, we've got two majors under our belt. This is the third major. We'll get the PGA Championship next month. We'll have the playoffs start in September. The season will be ending in September, and say, okay, now the season's over in September. Now we can think about baseball playoffs. We can think about football season and things like that. But the fact that the PGA Tour is basically acquiesced and say, look, September's not our month. We can't compete with football. We're not going to try to compete with football. So we're just going to end our season at the end of August. Say, okay, fine. You know, that's the way it is. But it's just weird. It's just weird that it just seems like it's happening. It's ending too fast.
Well, obviously, you know, we're catering a little bit to the big courier FedEx. Obviously they have a major stake in this, and so they have a major influence on the scheduling. There's no question about it. Justin Rose said the whole thing seems too rushed, and you're trying to peak for each individual major, and now you have to peak for a whole month when that's virtually not necessarily how it goes. You're hoping to play and peak for the week that of the major, and it just seems he, to use your words, felt like it's just too compressed.
Yeah. And how about next week? There's a WGC event. They're going to, I mean, granted, it's Memphis. I mean, look, no disparaging to the FedEx St. Jude Classic, which is
the good work that they do.
Absolutely, and it's a great event. But the fact that now they're calling it a WGC event just for the sake of having another WGC event, and the fact that it's coming on the heels of a major championship leading into the FedEx Cup playoffs, it feels even more rushed, even more compressed. And to a certain extent, I do feel, I won't say I feel bad for these guys because, you know, they get paid to play golf.
Good work if you can find it.
They get paid to play golf and they're really good at it and they make a good living at it. But the fact that they're playing in Northern Ireland, then they got to fly to Memphis, and then all of a sudden it's the FedEx Cup playoffs and they're playing 3 weeks before they get to the tour, you know, hopefully if their goal is to get to the tour championship, you know, you're talking about a lot of golf within a 5 or 6 week period of time.
My only thought to this while you were mentioning it was, I wonder how many guys that are on the bubble, let's say, of making it past, let's say, the first round, how many guys that can skip the first round of the playoffs versus who are actually like in the field at the Open. So the bottom half of that, you know, the one, let's say 75 to 150, may not even be. I don't know. Are they even?
Well, they're probably at the Barbasol Championship right now.
They're probably at the Barbasol.
They're trying to get more points and get some money to do that. But right. But the interesting thing is that it used to be when they had four playoff events that from the Northern Trust to the BMW, it was 125 to, or I'm sorry, it was the Northern Trust to the Dell Technologies, right, or whatever they called it in Boston.
Sure.
It was 125 to 100. Well, now it's Northern Trust to BMW, so now it's 125 to 70.
Right.
So if you're going to sit out, you're going to have to be much higher up on the list in order to do that.
Right.
So that's going to be very interesting to see if, let's say, the guys who are in the top 30, if they're going to sit out the Northern Trust and just say, look, I'm going to take a week off and I'm going to go to BMW and I'm going to, and then play one event, play the BMW in the hopes of getting into the top 30 for the tour championship.
Yeah. I know we got Nick on the line, but we got a junior championship and state open. So let's get that real quick.
We got plenty of stuff going on this week. First, on Wednesday, we had the 22nd WMGA Women's Pub Link Championship, which was at Glen Cove Golf Club. A college senior, Peyton Greco, graduate of Smithtown East High School, and also a member of Smithtown Landing. She shot a 76, and she won by three over 58-year-old Kelly Campbell, who is a member of the Quill & Tee Golf Club, which is akin to, let's say, the Nassau Players Club.
Yeah.
It's a club that's formed by the Met Golf Writers Association.
Correct.
I am
also a member.
Oh, well, there you go.
Of the Quill & Tee.
So then you should get a piece of what Kelly's getting for for that. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Peyton is going to be a senior this year at Ithaca College, and as you said, we had the Met Junior Championship that just completed yesterday, the 102nd Met Junior Championship at a place you know all too familiar, Southward Ho,
yep,
Country Club. That's in Bayshore.
Big fan.
Will Celebrity defeated Luke Sample 3-2. Will just graduated from Bergen Catholic High School in New Jersey. He is going to the University of Maryland. Will was first team All-State New Jersey this year, and he was actually the runner-up at the Met Junior last year, so he improved his spot one better. And Luke Sample, you might remember, we talked about him earlier on in the campaign. Luke was actually a medalist at a U.S. Open local qualifier. And when he went to the sectional qualifier in Purchase, he missed out on the playoff by one shot. And Luke, by the way, is 16 years old from New York. So you'd have to think that the future is pretty bright for him. And we hopefully look to see him be successful in the future. And then, of course, as you mentioned, the jewel of the Met season, Thursday, completed the New York State Open at Bethpage Black. Mike Ballo, assistant pro at Wingfoot Golf Club, of course, the site of next year's U.S. Open. He won in a playoff over Rob LeBritz. Mike is a teammate of Keegan Bradley at St. John's University. And what was interesting about Mike is he actually had to dodge Rob LeBritz. Rob actually missed a 4-foot par putt on 18 in regulation to force the playoff, and then Mike was able to two-putt from 45 feet to make his par and win. Of course, Robert Blitz, as we know, he was the low club pro at the PGA Championship this year, so another and a three-time winner of the New York State Open, so a fine effort there. John Clare finished in third. He was minus three. Mike Ballo's brother, Peter, finished in fourth. He was at minus one. He's an assistant pro at Silvermine Golf Club, which is in Connecticut. Defending champion Andrew Sabota finished in fifth. He was even par. Danny Balin from Fresh Meadow, two-time champion. He was eighth. Mark Brown from Tam O'Shanter. He's a two-time champ. He finished tied for ninth. Alex Beach from Westchester Country Club was T17. Matt Dobbins and Jason Caron, friends of the program, sure, both finished at tied 28th. And, of course, it's certainly worth noting the legend that is Darrell Kessler. Unfortunately, did not survive the first two rounds, but still to shoot 79-78 at Bethpage Black and miss the cut by five. I mean, that's pretty good stuff.
Pretty good stuff. And it wasn't particularly cool out this week either.
No,
not that
it was
not today, but still amazing. And a big week for A.W. Tillinghast, yeah. Southwood Ho, and Bethpage Black, prominent in this week's offerings in the local tour.
And our future friend of the program, Nick Beto, he finished in tied for 48.
All right, well, that was Steve Goldman with our little news and notes section. We'll be back with Nick Beto. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to the program. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony, he's Steve, and on the line is PGA professional Nassau Country Club, Nick Beto. Nick, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. Pleasure. Let's start with the beginning. We're always interested in knowing, getting to know, get to profile some of our guests and talk about how they got interested in golf. And where does this journey begin for you?
I grew up out at Easton Shirley, not really a golfer, so to speak, growing up as a kid. And from where I am here today, I wish I started earlier, because seeing all these kids coming up, they're so good, so young. I just got started playing with my folks on the weekend, playing a lot with mom and dad. And dad really got me going into the game. And just kind of, you know, was just a weekend warrior, so to speak, all through high school and just after high school. And then started moving down south for the winter months and took it a little more seriously down there, and then kind of led me to where I am here today.
Did you grow up playing the links of Shirley while that was still around?
Yeah, I did. That was my first job in the business.
Really?
I think in 99 it opened up. Yeah, I was a cart guy out there. It was relatively close to my house, so that was kind of where I got the start. And I played there, but high school, I played my senior year at high school, and I was over at Middle Island. Mm-hmm. So definitely enjoyed the links at Shirley. It's a good facility. Sad to see where it is today, but it was a nice start.
Yeah, they never even developed that. Did they develop that area? Or I'm not sure if they put houses there, but I mean, I used to love going out there and play. I always played it a couple times a year.
My understanding, it's half developed.
Okay.
There's some houses. I know they had a par 3 course there. I think most of it is on that, where the par 3 course was. But
okay.
Yeah, nevertheless, it was an unbelievable facility, and it's a shame it didn't last.
Nick, how did your journey take you to Nassau Country Club?
I started really kind of bounce around the public country clubs for a while. I was at, like I said, Links at Shirley, and then Great Rock, out in Wading River there, and then got my start over at Piping Rock about 7 or 8 years ago, and did 5 years there, and great years, great facilities. And then actually traveled to Jersey for a year, a place called Greenbrook in North Caldwell, New Jersey. A friend of mine, Andrew Bostrom, was the head professional there, and
sure,
he asked me to come work for him for a year. And that was a great experience, seeing a totally different membership and totally different section. And then my wife, Maren, who's also in the business, she got an offer to go to Old Westbury that year we were in Jersey. So we ultimately were on our way back to the Mets section. I took a little teaching job over at Rockville Links, working for a good friend of mine, John Guyton. Great membership, great little club over there. Had a great time. And then I ultimately replaced Aaron Mueller, who got the head professional job at Island Hills, who worked with Maren at Huntington for a couple of years. So we had a little relationship there and just kind of congratulated him on his promotion. He told me this is something I should kind of go for, so I put in for it, and lo and behold, here I am. But that's kind of just a brief overview of the job history in the last eight years or so.
You know, you mentioned about working in northern New Jersey. It's kind of a little surprising, I think, geographically, thinking that golf clubs in northern New Jersey are not part of the Met section. So how was it different working for a different section, growing up and, you know, working in the Met section and then going to New Jersey?
Yeah, no doubt. I play a lot in the winter times. I've gone down south for 15 years in the winter, and just seeing guys from all over the country coming down, and you kind of, the Met section has that aura about it, I guess you would say, that you know, it's kind of the best or one of the best in the country. So in going to work in a different section, it was a little eye-opening in some respects. Still a great section. I mean, they got a good playing section, but in every tournament you got maybe, I don't know, 10 or 15 guys that could win, where here in the Met section you probably got 30 or 40 guys that could win on any given tournament. So obviously the fields run a little deeper. A lot of great golf courses in Jersey, you know, your Plainfields and your Baltusrol and Somerset Hills and Mountain Ridge. I mean, there's a ton of them. So, you know, it was good to see a different section, see how everything was run, and then, you know, obviously it's good to be back home here.
Absolutely. You mentioned a couple of clubs and people. Obviously, I'm very familiar with Andrew Bostrom. Took many lessons from him, being a one move to better golf guy myself. Really good guy. Luke Knutson, mm-hmm. the superintendent at Rockville Links, is a friend of the program. He was just on a couple weeks ago. You've got a very nice network of people here. It really speaks to the quality of people that are in the Met section.
Yeah, all good people. Andrew's a good friend of mine. We go way back when he was at, I heard you guys mention the Southward Ho days, and he was when he was working there. So, yeah, he's a good friend of both Maren and I.
Yeah, and seems to be doing very well down in New Jersey at that club as well. Do you have any particular teaching influences? I know, obviously, we talked about Andrew. I knew he was a one move to better golf. I'm just curious as to how would you describe, maybe not in like Twitter, 140 characters or less, but how would you describe your teaching style?
So probably about 9 years now, I met and still working with my current coach. His name is Matt Denzer, and he is basically a Ledbetter disciple. He's worked under the Ledbetter Academy down there in PGA National, and he's mm-hmm. up at Whistler in the summer times. But so I would say that would be kind of more my philosophy. I've learned a lot from him. I've shadowed him a bunch in private lessons and clinics, and this really kind of, he's taken me under his wing. I send him video of students a lot, and he's really helped me a lot in the teaching aspect of things. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's kind of been my inspiration and my philosophy and kind of my mentor, if you will.
Absolutely. Want to get to, I have a couple more questions, but I got to take a short break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorcia.
Hi, I'm Dr. Frank Rossi of Cornell University. As the stewards of New York's golf courses, superintendents are dedicated to protecting our natural resources. In heavily developed areas like Long Island, golf courses offer large expanses of open space that provide environmental benefits, such as allowing water to infiltrate into the ground naturally and providing habitat for native species such as bees and butterflies. To help manage golf courses in harmony with the environment, the state's golf industry has established a comprehensive best management practices program to educate and serve as a resource for superintendents. For more information, see our website at nysgolfbmp.cals.cornell.edu.
Owning the latest and greatest golf equipment makes no difference if it's not fit perfectly for your game. At Mizuno, we create irons and woods for all skill level golfers, from our MP18 family featuring three different models designed for the better player to our JPX family featuring three different models designed to give you distance and forgiveness. We have a model for everybody. Visit Pete's Golf Shop and get custom fit for a set of Mizunos today.
All right, and we're back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsese. I'm Anthony. He's Steve, and on the line is PGA professional Nick Beto out of Nassau Country Club. You mentioned talking about playing in the very difficult Met section. You've had a pretty good run this particular year. I know you won the championship, the LI Open, the PGA Professional, excuse me, back in 13. But this particular year, you've had a pretty good run as well, losing to Svoboda, who is pretty good player and an ex-PGA Tour player, and Danny Ballon as well. So just talk about a little bit about the your recent run of form lately.
Yeah, I had the very fortunate to have the ability to join a country club down south, and played a lot of golf down there, and really got my game dialed in this upcoming season, and put a lot of work in, and it showed at the Long Island Open. Like you said, I lost to a great player and obviously a proven player, but to go toe to toe with him in the final group there at the Long Island Open, basically have a two man shootout. I was pretty happy with how I performed and the effort I gave, and be able to have a chance there at the end. But I did all I could, and he just made some unbelievable putts on me. And
well, you didn't
the regulation
really,
there.
I mean, saying you did all you could is fine, but what Andrew Svoboda did, not only in regulation but in the playoff, I mean, obviously nothing to hang. I mean, you didn't win the championship, but still, there's no reason to feel, I mean, even
you
a little
did
bit.
Anything to lose it.
Even a little bit disappointed.
Right. No, I know. That's what everybody keeps telling me. But for me, right, to be
exactly.
there and to do all I could, and ultimately the goal is to win and to be in the position I was in with two or three holes to play. It just didn't get done, and for one reason or another. Of course, I didn't per se do anything to lose the championship, but yeah, that's golf, right? It happens.
Well, I think that's the beauty. I mean, well, maybe not in this case the beauty, but right. I mean, that's sport. I mean, that's what teaches us that, just because, there's no deserve has nothing to do with it. You may have done all, ticked all the boxes in sport. You worked hard, you prepared, you do everything you're supposed to do, and you execute exactly the way you do. And sometimes that's just happens to be the case where it's not good enough. And that's life in general.
Yeah, no doubt. It was a big learning experience, and it's something I'll certainly build on in the future. And when I'm in that position again, I'll be better prepared.
Well, one of my favorite authors is John Feinstein, and when he wrote the book about golf, he said, or at least the pros told him, he said, no matter what level you're at, you always think you can be five strokes better than where you were, regardless of how good the round is. So obviously, you can always think about this one shot here, this one putt there, whatever it is. Like I said, shooting seven under in a Long Island championship, I mean, nothing to sneeze at.
You never leave the golf course saying you got them all today. You can shoot 60 and you'd be like, I missed that one,
Yeah.
And another great result that you had in May was you made it to the round of 16 at the LI PGA Championship, unfortunately losing to Danny Ballon. Again, another tremendous Met area golfer. So, it's not like these results are against, let's say, whatever you want to say about the competition, as you said before. Pretty right. much, no matter who you're playing in a Met section event, they're really good golfers.
Oh yeah, and like I said, the fields are deep, so it doesn't matter if it's match play or stroke play events. You gotta give it your all every single time, and anybody could show up and beat you at any given moment.
Nick, how difficult is it to balance the teaching pro side with the I need to keep my game sharp side?
It's certainly time-consuming, and just for whatever reason, this is my third year in a row at a different club. So, it's, you know, learning new people and new policies, new procedures, and just kind of learning a new operation. You know, that takes time as well. And so, yeah, you just got to manage your time, whether it's getting up a little earlier or staying a little later. But I try to get in at least an hour every single day of some sort of practice in, whether it's chipping or putting. You know, it might not be a solid hour in a row. I might do 20 minutes here. I might go putt for a half hour here or whatever. But I playing is very important to me and staying competitive. So I make it a priority to do something every single day to try to keep my game as sharp as possible. But, you know, in these kind of dog days of summer here with this stretch of weather we had, it's, you know, you're on the lesson tee for 6-7 hours and you try to go play for another hour or two. You do that for 2-3 weeks straight and 100-degree humidity and heat indexes, it kind of weighs on you. So, you know, you got to take care of yourself this time of year and be prepared. And I kind of was on the back end of that, the state open last year. I'm sorry, last week or this week, I should say. And it kind of kicked me in the butt there, the final round. I kind of ran out of steam coming down the stretch there. But well, like I said, it's just another experience. We'll learn from it and we'll be better in the future.
Well, the black horse will definitely suck the life out of you from not just a mental standpoint, but obviously a physical standpoint too. And like Anthony just said, even on a normal day, forget about the New York State Open. So, you know, still a tremendous result the way you've been playing.
Yes, I just, you know, I just didn't have my best stuff the first couple of days, so I spent a lot of energy grinding those first two rounds out, and I, you know, put myself in a good position for the final round, but just the combination of the heat and the grinding out there on that golf course, it just took a toll on me. So, yeah, well, I obviously would hope for a better result, but we'll be better in the future.
I know you weren't there when the U.S. the women's AM was at Nassau, but I'm just, how much are you loving being at Nassau? What's going on over there? Tell us a little bit about the club.
Yeah, Nassau. It's an awesome facility. Golf course is spectacular. I think that year they put in USGA spec greens the year of that women's event. So I mean, the putting surfaces are absolutely flawless. And they're actually next year they're planning on doing a full bunker renovation, so they'll be taking out a lot of older bunkers that are no longer in play that only kind of hurt the you know, the senior players or the female golfers that can't really hit it very far, or even junior players for that matter. And they're going to make it a little bit more user friendly for that playing ability, you know, move forward tees and you know, just kind of redesign bunkers and put them in better placement. So that's in the plans for next year. I was able to walk the golf course early in May with one of the designers, Tom Moskoff, and it was truly a treat to walk with him and listen to his perspective on golf course design and how things should be in his eye. And it was really interesting, and I look forward to next fall when they get this project completed. It's going to be a great, great facility. As far as the membership goes, they've been very, very welcoming, very supportive. Our assistance championship we have in September, we, as assistants here, we got to sell raffle tickets to our membership friends and family to kind of support the purse and to support the event. And my head professional, Drew Pahalski, was fantastic. He sent an email out to the membership right away, and just the overflowing of responses of people that wanted to be involved and purchase tickets and support me was really overwhelming. So awesome. The support's been great, the membership's been great. Drew, my boss, is a fantastic guy to work for, so we're off to a good start here.
Well, I don't know if you knew this, but in year one of On Par with Anthony Scorsia, I had one Maren Crowley on the program, and now I've had her other half, Nick Beto. So make sure, if there's anybody else part of the family that I need to have on the show, please let me know. But it's been a pleasure speaking with you this morning. Absolutely loved it, and look forward to hearing from you in the future.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me, and keep me in mind in any future. I'd love to be on again.
Absolutely. All right, have a great day, Nick.
Thank you.
All right, that was Nick Beto, PGA Professional, Nassau Country Club. Excellent golfer, obviously. A good guy.
I mean, great results. I mean, you have to think at least one of these days the golf gods are going to point in his direction one of these days, and he'll hoist up a trophy.
Well, we hope so, even though deserve has nothing to do with it, but we feel like he's owed one.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? All right, folks, that's it for this week. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. please hydrate and stay cool.
Enjoy the British Open.
Enjoy the British Open. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsese.